Happy Saturday morning to everybody out there. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. How you doing, Beth? It's a Saturday morning. It's another Saturday morning. Do not tell me it is warm and sunny in Monterey, Mexico. Tell me something
I'll
else.
I'll say we've had an uncharacteristic frosting of snow here on this late April in Mexico. It's, gray skies all the way.
There you go. That's what I want to hear. Hey, welcome to all of our listeners out there. Again, we got a new time slot. This is our third week in our new time slot. I'll probably stop announcing it after this, but we might have some new folks going, hey, these people were not on at 10, and who are these people? And so we are thrilled to have this 10 o'clock Eastern time slot, 7 o'clock Pacific. Hopefully get some whole new gaggle of listeners over there on the West Coast.
Absolutely. Welcome to all of you. And I'm excited about today's show today, sir.
One of your favorites is on, and I think you might be a little nervous.
I mean, maybe when we started the radio show years ago, I had a little bucket list of a few people I really wanted to have a conversation with, and she was on it. Miss Anne Lamott will be on today.
Anne Lamott, that's right. And, her books are not for the faint of heart.
Mm-mm.
They're raw, they're honest, and I think that's why you dig her. I mean, she's just an honest writer. I mean...
I saw her review of hers recently, and it said that she's both reverent and irreverent in the same breath. And I just kind of find myself gravitating to those kind of people that aren't folks who are totally too reverent. I end up feeling like, what do we really have in common? And folks that are irreverent end up leaving me with kind of a pit in my stomach. So I like the little combo. I like someone who is both heavenly minded, but. Is honest about what it looks like to work out her faith here on Earth.
Absolutely. And that she's going to be on the second segment. And then after the break at the bottom of the hour, Paul Young is going to be on, author of The Shack, which back in the day was a slightly controversial read. I loved it, but slightly controversial read. He's got a new book out called Crossroads. And so, hey, if you're looking to maybe hear some background about a summer read that you might want to pick up, Anne has a couple of new books out. I hope I can call her Anne. I mean, she's pretty famous.
And
Paul has a new book out as well, so should be an incredibly interesting, good show today. And again, we get some great guests. I mean, Jenna Gieses, we need to have a shout out, quite honestly, right now to Jenna Gieses, who goes ahead and she books all of our guests. I mean, it's not like you and I are sweating the details.
She is
unbelievable getting these people and getting us organized. And so, shout out to Jenna. Thank you, Jenna.
Okay. Speaking about The Shack, were you on the early end of that curve? Were you right in the vortex of The Shack, or were you like a late bloomer to The Shack? Where were you on the reader spectrum?
I was early on. I really liked the book, and then it kind of blew up, and then people were like, there were people shouting about it, yelling about it, and I was kind of mystified, and I kind of get it, I suppose. Interestingly enough, I don't even know if you knew this, Paul, right after he wrote the book, where I work at Cincinnati Hills Christian Academy in Cincinnati, Ohio, we invited Paul to come and be the speaker at our Spiritual Life Emphasis Week. And that was in 2008. It still is a week that our alumni, our teachers, our administration still talks about. It was a powerful, sort of almost mystical week. I mean, and that, I don't use that word very often. But it was a powerful mystical week, and as a result of that, he came back and spoke at graduation that same year. And so to hear him live and just hear his story. So anyway, I was on the early end of that, and then we had the benefit of hearing him speak at our school. It was great, great stuff.
Speaking of your school, we're coming up to the end of the school year. Do you have, like, the countdown to the end?
You have a little chain
hanging in your office, and you rip a day off like you do before Christmas?
I am sure that there are plenty of people who do this, and there's probably not too many. I have a new job this year, so I'm actually working sort of in the school administration as compared to my previous gig as the middle school principal.
Uh-huh.
So I'm kind of behind the wall there, and so my job just feels the same most every day as compared to when I was middle school principal, and it would change every 30 minutes. I don't feel quite as stressed or overwhelmed or like I want to jump off a bridge like I might have done, at the end of every previous year after working with 400 middle school students.
Mm-hmm. And we're coming up on prom season. You have any children going to prom, do you think?
I have a son. He's a senior, so he is going to prom. And so we've been doing the whole,
the pressure
tux.
The pressure is on senior boys to, like, ask in a creative way. I feel bad for them. Does your son feel like pressure?
I am so glad you brought that up, quite honestly. And this might be a bigger story and that our listeners may agree with. I don't know. But it is ridiculous.
I mean, hot air balloons.
You have to create some type of lifelong video to ask somebody to go to, like, a movie on Saturday. It's ridiculous. Charlie feels this great pressure to, like, I have to create this moment.
Yes.
And the extent to which they go, I mean,
yes.
It's unbelievable. I said, whatever happened to the day where you could just call someone on the phone or see them face-to-face and just genuinely say, you know, I really do enjoy being with you, and I would love it if you would go to prom with me. Just the simple sincerity.
Yeah. Because if the
I'm an old man.
What are the expectations actually on the night of the date? You know what I mean?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's like, he has to get dressed up. He wants to buy flowers. He's spending hours in his mind trying to figure out the perfect way. I mean, he's already done it, but having to figure out the perfect way to ask this young lady, a sweet girl, to go to prom with him. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's totally absorbing your life. But if you don't do that, somehow now, you know, your video might not go viral on YouTube or something. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
When I was growing up, it was a family rule that I had to say yes to the first boy that asked me to a date. Like, I couldn't
what a great
say, like,
rule.
No to one boy and then yes to another, because that would hurt their feelings or hold out for. So I would have been like, you know, forget the planning stages to the boy I really like. Like, get on with the asking, or else you get stuck going with the wrong one.
That would not be good.
Here.
Hey, I got to tell you a funny story. I promise to make it quick. I was a junior in high school. Actually, a senior in high school. It was a winter dance, girl-ass-guy thing, you know, one of those.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think I've told this story before. And I had a particular girl that I wanted to go with.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that she was planning to ask, right? And at least that's sort of what the rumor mill said. And so I got home after basketball practice or something, and I got a phone call, and it was from someone else. It was from another girl. And she asked me to go. And I sort of had the same unwritten rule that you did. And so the first person who asked, you got to say yes to. So I said yes. My little sister, who I will never let her forget it, about 10 minutes after, she walks in and she says, oh, by the way, this other girl, so-and-so, she called and left a message. And she wanted you to call her back. Yes. So she had already called when I had said yes. This other girl was sweet, quite nice, but, you know, I had this other person I wanted to go with, and so I had that same rule, and I remember just being so mad, and my mom just saying, listen, there's no getting out of this. You said yes, you're going with this person, and you're going to treat them like a queen. Now be quiet. And I look back on it now, and it was absolutely the right thing to do. But in the moment, it was kind of a painful thing.
Huh?
Yes. Hey, before we go to the break, what are you doing? It's the end of April. Where are you going? You travel all over the place. What are you doing here in the next couple of weeks?
Oh, great question. On the 30th of April, I'll be in Indianapolis. If any of our listeners are in the Indianapolis area, I'd love to chat with you then. On May 1st, I'm going to be in Nashville speaking at the Summit of the Orphans, Summit 9. We've talked about that before with the Christian Alliance for Orphans President Jed Medefine. And then on May 2nd, I'm going to be speaking at the Evangelical Press Association's annual conference. That's also in Nashville. And then on Sunday, I'll be in Cincinnati, Ohio. So if you're in any of those Midwestern cities, Nashville, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, in the next week or so, just get on our website, and I'd love to meet you.
BethKuchenberger.com is your website, and they can figure out your schedule there.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we got a great show today. I know you're excited. I'm excited. Right after the break, Anne Lamott is joining us. She's written, like, I don't know, like 18 books or something like that.
Yeah,
prolific, cool. Best-selling author, one of your favorites. So we will definitely be looking forward to that. And then Paul Young, after the bottom of the hour break, author of The Shack, has a new book out. We're going to be talking about that as well. So don't go anywhere. Do not go anywhere if you're out there listening. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob. That's Beth. We'll be back right after this.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Ibram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Beth and Rob, I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. A happy Saturday morning to you out there, Beth.
It's a great Saturday morning here.
It is a great Saturday morning. It's always a great Saturday morning, again, in just in hot and sunny, warm Monterey, Mexico. I know it's always fabulous there, and we live through the ups and downs of weather here in the Midwest.
Well, all of you are invited at all times to come here. We welcome visitors.
Absolutely. You know, when we first started the show just over a year ago, it's hard to imagine, by the way, I mean, that we've only been on the air just about a year. We talked about who would we want to have on the show, right? And we talked about, wow, if we could have this person on the show or that person on the show or whatever. And I remember one of probably the first or second names out of your mouth, if we could ever have Anne Lamott on the show, that would be fabulous. And lo and behold, here we are. And it's kind of an honor to have her on the show. She's a prolific author. She's got two new books out, best-selling author. And what we've talked about, what we love about her, is she's just a raw, honest writer. And we love that. And so anyway, Anne, welcome to the show. We are so glad that you're joining us.
Thank you. I have a lot of static on this phone, but maybe you're not hearing it.
Nah, you sound great to us.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Tell us a little bit, there may be some of our listeners who aren't as familiar with you. That's kind of hard to imagine, but with a best-selling author like you. But tell us a little bit about your journey, how you became a writer in the first place.
Well, my father was a writer, so I grew up around somebody who was sitting down every day, very early in the morning, and just getting his work done no matter what. And I eventually was able to develop that habit, which is the most important thing for a writer, I think, is the habit and the discipline. And I just was a really shy child, and I read voraciously, and I just really found myself in the written word. And I guess I grew up and wanted to be one of those people that could help transport people through stories.
Yeah.
I know that you have two books. Hi, Anne. This is Beth. And I know you have two books that came out this year. But tell us a little bit about Some Assembly Required, and just tell us about your grandson. I mean, isn't every grandmother, that's their favorite question. Tell us a little bit about your grandson. But what inspired you to write about his life and about your experiences?
Well, I'd written this book called Operating Instructions 20 years ago that was a journal of my son's first year. And Sam was born in 1989, and then he and his girlfriend got pregnant when Sam was 19 and the girlfriend Amy was 20, and it was so shocking. I mean, I'd always wanted to be a grandparent, but I thought it would be in 10 years or so. And Sam really wanted to write this journal because he had so loved having operating instructions as his own personal private love from me, from my heart to his heart, because he's always felt like my outside heart. So he and I decided to just do it together. It's mostly me. And it's not really about my grandson so much. It's really still about my son, about having a grown son who has a child, and about the same old difficulty and letting go of realizing that you're not in charge of much, that your kid is still not that interested in your opinion, and that they that it injures them to try to control them, and that your ideas are not good ideas all the time, and that your help is not helpful very often. It's just controlling. And so it's a lot about the exact same stuff from operating instructions, about fear and faith and family and growing up and growing older and just the amazement of life.
Hmm. Did you find that you repeated those themes from 20 years ago? I mean, Rob and I are always talking about how it'd be nice to think that we're actually moving in a direction, but sometimes it feels like I'm doing a lot of sweating, but I'm just on the treadmill. You know, I'm just repeating the same kinds of lessons and new settings with new people and new relationships, but it's still the same things that are getting worked out inside of me. Did you find that you're revisiting some of those initial fears as you entered this new stage? Or
well, I believe that there are about three things that really, really trouble us our whole life through, and so it seems like we're not getting anywhere and that it's just the same old stuff with a different background, but it's really just core human condition stuff. And so my experience is that I get just as crazy or rattled or clingy or obsessed, let's say, as I ever did. And I find my way back. It is a path. It really isn't a treadmill. It just feels like that. And I find my way back to the path much more quickly. And before, I might have been kind of strung out on some problem, like a dog with a chew toy, you know, just flinging it over and chasing it down and flinging and chasing. And before, I might have had a couple of really bad weeks before I could find peace again or freedom. And now it might be a really bad day, but usually I, by bedtime, am starting to go, oh, for God's sake, I didn't even realize it was that the same old trolley car, and I got right on. But I get off it faster now. Mm-hmm.
I see also you have another new book out, Help, Thanks, Wow, The Three Essential Prayers. I haven't had a chance to look at it as I've had a chance to look at the other one, but tell me a little bit about that and how those, you've narrowed down all the possible prayers to these. I'm intrigued by the title, Help, Thanks, Wow, The Three Essential Prayers. How did you get there?
Well, I have been sober for a long time, almost 27 years. And when I was first sober, I just felt like I was a prayer, you know, a begging. And because I was just such a mess. I was 32, but I really was a lot younger in a lot of ways. And then I believed in God, but I still, it's like the old joke, what's the difference between you and God, that God never thinks he's you. I'd always think I was God or God's West Coast rep, and I would try to solve the problems of my obsessive, you know, low self-esteem thinking with my obsessive low self-obsessed thinking. So I would always find that God answered my prayers, and I'd say, oh, thank you. Oh, my God, thank you so much. And then over the years, as I began healing mentally and in every way, spiritually and psychologically, by being sober and also being a really devout member of a little church, I realized that the one great prayer is wow. And that all you have to do about a third of the time to get your mojo back is to step outside and to look around you and to look up, to stop looking down at your feet and to look up at the sky or the branches or listen for the birds, and it will just kind of blow your mind sometimes, and then you say, wow. Instead of going, you know, poor me, and I feel so victimized, and I'm such a martyr, and after all I've done for them, they treat me, and da-da-da. And then instead you notice a little Oregon junco in the branches, and you stop to listen to its song, and you go, wow.
Hmm. Yeah, I just got back from a beach vacation, and every time I sit down and just watch the waves roll in, I have that same thought. It's just you step out of yourself and say, wow, this is just amazing. Now, I don't know if it's like asking a mother what her favorite child might be, but you've written so many books, and they're so real to you, and that comes across to the reader. Do you have a favorite book?
Well, I really love the two we were talking about, Operating Instructions and Some Assembly Required, because they're people really love, people are really helped by someone just telling the truth about what we're really like and how incredibly hard it can be to be a parent of a colicky infant, a parent of a teenager. Mm. In my case, a parent of a teenager with a colicky infant. And how often we just look, we try to control people, places, and things. We think that if other people behave better, then we could be happy. We think that as soon as this, as soon as that. So I love these journals because they really are just such immediate renditions and capturing love and life as it sort of tromps by every day. And they're both very much about God, and I think they're my two funniest books too. So those are the two. But you know, there are other books I really love. My first novel was called Hard Laughter, and it was about my dad getting sick when I was young, 23, yeah, with brain cancer. And I love that because he was alive for it and alive to see it, for me to find a publishing house, actually the same house I'm still at, Viking Penguin. And so that is beyond words that I got to write kind of a comical love letter about our family against all odds sticking together when the nuclear bomb of brain cancer had landed on us. That's like so precious to me. And then people like the writing book Bird by Bird because it's the same thing as with Some Assembly Required. It's just such a relief for people if you'll just tell the truth and just say writing is so much harder than I would have ever thought. A lot of days are much harder than they are easy. I want to give up all the time. Everything I've written that anyone might like was probably 3 or 4 drafts. Nothing comes easily to me. And the enemy is always the perfectionism and the low self-esteem, just as it is in parenting or any aspect of our lives. So
right,
those books are most special to me.
I think that one of the things that I notice that people respond to your writing is the authenticity, the truth-telling in the way that you communicate. Have you struggled to find that voice inside of you, or is the way that you write, the way that you speak, and the way that you live in relationships, that desire to be authentic?
Well, thank you. And everything I write, as I just said, just takes so many drafts. So people say, oh, you talk just like you write. But for me to write, it takes forever. And I just always told my writing students to write what they'd like to come upon, because that loving some piece of work is real indication of what maybe you would best be served by writing yourself and adding to that pool. And for me, I love people telling the truth. I love extremely smart, funny women. I love for people to just reveal that they're not the perfect appearance that they present, that no one is, that no marriage is, that nothing is, that, you know, that underneath it we're so fallible and we're so human and we're so touching. And I can't tell 90% of the stories that happened to me and my family because those are very private, and I don't want to hurt anyone. I don't want to invade anybody's privacy or space. So, and I always say to them, like, there were 20 people for Easter at my table, and I said, you know, I have the goods on all of you, but I just don't write about it because I really don't want to hurt people. If I want to write about very painful family stuff, I do it in fiction. And when I pick up something by a man or a woman who's just telling the truth and is really smart and has a nice sense of humor, I just feel like I'm home. I feel like back to help. Yeah. Things. Wow, I feel like, oh my God, thank you. And I also feel like I'm safe for 10 days or so, like when the new Mary Oliver or Barbara Kingsolver or Elizabeth Strout comes out. It's like, oh my God, I've got like 10 days of every single night being able to get into bed with this voice that I trust. Right. And we'll go anywhere with. And that's what a great writer does for us.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Ann, thank you so much for being on the show. All of your books, it's funny that you say those are the things you like in other people, because those are the exact same things that people say they love about your writing.
Oh,
and
thank
so
you.
We are just so glad that you were on the show, and nothing the best to you with the new books.
And to both of you and your show also. Bless you and thank you.
Yes, thanks so much.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Well, there you go, Beth. I mean, if you can't find an Anne Lamott book to read that you might like, then you're just not paying attention. She's got so many of them. So, hey, this is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we're going to have Paul Young right after the break. The author of The Shack has a new book out, so do not go anywhere. We'll be right back after this.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care, at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. And Ken, the producer, was just telling me a little joke on the, in the headphone. It caught me laughing right as we came back on the show. But Welcome back. We hope you're enjoying your Saturday morning and enjoying our show this morning. Anne Lamott was on just a few minutes ago, and what an interesting woman she is, a prolific author. And Beth, I know that we were talking during the break. Just, I'd love to just have dinner with that woman. I mean, just to hear what goes on in her brain.
We didn't get a chance to ask her what she's working on next, but I bet there is something that she's always working on next, if I had to guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say I'm equally excited about our next guest, Paul Young. He won't remember me, but I did have the chance to meet him, as I think I mentioned earlier. I work at Cincinnati Hills Christian Academy, and right after The Shack came out in, I think, 2008, 2009, he spoke at a Spiritual Life Emphasis Week at our school and ended up speaking at our graduation. And it was a powerful, powerful time. And so when I heard he was coming on the show, and I was really, really excited to talk to him a little bit about The Shack and the aftermath of that, but more about his new book, Crossroads, which has come out recently. So, Paul, welcome to the show. We're so glad that you could be on with us.
You know, I'm thrilled to be on in the same show with Anne Lamott. Come on. And, you know, let me tell you, when people have asked me, of all the events and things that you've spoken at, that school event was unbelievable what happened there.
It really was.
It's one of those.